Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Well, we are going to be talking about elections today. And, you know, I've come to the conclusion, I mean, I've always thought this, you know, but really this year it just hit me hard, that Israeli elections are kind of like a circus. And I'm going to explain to you why during this show. We're going to also be having on Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem, who's going to weigh in on the issue. We'll be expanding this to how our elections may affect the rest of the region here in the Middle East and perhaps even the world. That should be very interesting. But, you know, Israeli politics are confusing for a lot of people who don't understand how the party system works here in our parliament. The parliament in Israel is called the Knesset. We have political parties that are voted in. We do not vote for individuals like you do in the United States or in other countries. We vote for a political party. The head of that political party then becomes, if they can make a coalition together, they become the prime minister. We have 120 seats in our parliament, in our Knesset. You have to have a majority of at least 61 seats in order to be able to hold a government and rule. And it's a bit of a process in how to do this, who is picked, who becomes prime minister, etc. We're going to go into all of that during the show today. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to phone in. We are broadcasting at a little bit of a different time today. If the phone is not answered, it's because I'm not in the studio and our staff is not inside the studio at the moment that you're calling in. In any case, I want to say hi to everybody who's listening in from all over the world, from all over the United States and Israel, Canada, South Africa, Uruguay, hola, Norway, United Kingdom. I do not know how to say hello in Norwegian. So whoever's listening in from Norway, drop me a letter or a note on Facebook or whatever you want, whichever is easiest for you, and tell me, how do you say hello, good day, something like that, whatever you greet each other with there in cold, cold Norway. I'm very curious and I would like to be able to greet you in your language. All right, so all this is coming up on the show today. Israeli politics, how does it work? Why is it like a circus? It really is. And musical chairs as well. Oh boy, we're going to go into that.
G'day, I'm Jono Vandoor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
We're going to be talking about...
What are we going to talk about?
A person who takes out a terrorist with a pizza tray.
And there's Donald Trump talking to a turkey. What's that about?
A 71-year-old rock star is a staunch supporter of Israel.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind.
Every Thursday.
All right, so we're talking today about the elections in Israel. How does the Knesset work? Well, Israeli politics can be confusing for some. When Israel's parliament or the Knesset dissolves and goes to new elections like we are doing now, some Knesset members may jump ship and go from one political party that they were elected to and join another political party in the Knesset. Or they can even create a new political party, which we just saw with Bennett and Shaked, who left the Jewish Home Party and made a new party called the New Right. So much movement reminds me of the game Musical Chairs. And when new parties arise in the Knesset, some with really silly names like The Movement, that's Tzipi Livni's Hatnua, The Movement, or Kadima, which it means forward. You're going to vote for the Forward Party or the Jewish Home Party or the Israel is Our Home Party. That's Yisrael Beiteinu. Then there's the New Right, as we just said. And there's another new party coming into existence now called Israel's Resilience Party, and that's headed by Gantz. And then we've got the Yesh Atid, which is There is a Future Party. I mean, all these names, it sounds to me just like a circus and musical chairs. So is it the egos of our Knesset members that make them jump ship and go from party to try to get more votes or garner a better, higher seat up in the party? Or is there really a need to break up, move on, create new parties or not? We're going to be discussing this on the show today and how Israeli politics works. Here to tell us more about this, we have as our guest Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem. He is a researcher, former lecturer at Ben-Gurion University, and has authored over 60 books and 400 research papers on science, political science, and more. He commentates on Mideast and world issues, and he's working on a book now that he started 5 months ago about anti-Semitism. Oh, I wonder how that plays into things here. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem.
Thank you for having me.
It's very good to have you on. So give a very basic, brief summary on how Israeli politics works for somebody who's just tuning in, doesn't understand how Israeli elections work. Give them a brief, simple explanation.
Well, first of all, this evening is the beginning of the month of Shvat, which is when the Knesset was formed. It's actually very suitable that we're talking about it today. Now, people need to understand the basics. First of all, the Knesset is always composed of 120 members. In principle, not in practice, in principle, members of the government, that is saying government ministers, are members of the Knesset. I'm saying that's in principle. It doesn't always happen that way. There have been exceptions to that when people have become ministers without having been elected. But that's a different story. We won't go into that for the moment. So the government is formed from members of Knesset. Legally, by law right now, the president, after elections, listens to all the different parties that have been voted into the Knesset, and we'll get into how parties are voted in or not, and then decides who among the leaders of these various parties has the best chance, in his opinion, to form a government.
His or her opinion.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Generally speaking, the major question that he asks each head of party is, who do you favor as being the head of the forthcoming government? So how does a government? Let's start from the very beginning. How does a government fall? How does a government stop being a government? Generally speaking, there are two ways, well, three ways, actually. The first way, which actually is rare, the existing government has simply finished its time, its legal time in office. It is automatically dissolved.
Which is 4 years.
Which is 4.5 years, actually. That has very rarely occurred because, generally speaking, the head of government will prefer to preempt. And it might be because of bad reasons. It might be because of good reasons. He might preempt because it's more comfortable time in terms of the calendar. For instance, an election time in the middle of August would be not good for the country, generally speaking, because too many people are on holidays and things like that, and it's very uncomfortable. So you want to time the election at a time when it's good for the people, as well as when it's good for the government, for governing. And the second way is the members of Knesset vote, which is what happened now, to dissolve itself and to go to elections. And this is what happened now that the government, all of the ministers, unanimously decided that the timing was right. And the third way is, if a government loses the what's called the confidence of the Knesset. That's, for instance, what happened with Ehud Barak. After a very, very short term, about a year and a half, his government lost the confidence of the Knesset, and the Knesset voted him out and decided to go to elections because they said, we don't have a viable government for the people. Remember, the Knesset is the one who's directly responsible to the people in terms of the concept of a viable government and et cetera. The American concept of we the people, that's handled by the Knesset under the direct responsibility of the chairman or chairwoman of the Knesset, Yoshev Rosh, which in this case is Yuli Edelstein. So that's the way that the government, one government, goes from being in power to going to a period of elections. Now, during the period of elections, from the time when the government is, when the Knesset is dissolved, until the next government is actually sworn in, the previous government is still in power, still has all of the regulatory powers that it had previously. It does not have certain powers in terms of formation of new laws and things like that, clearly, because there's no Knesset in session that can handle it. But in principle, if an emergency happens, the Knesset can be reconvened by the government in order to take care of a question that needs to be taken care of. As far as I recall, that specifically has never happened. But the present government is in power until the next government is actually
elected and functioning.
Okay, by the Knesset.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's make a distinction now between the president of Israel and the prime minister of Israel. Explain that to our listeners. What's the difference?
Excellent question. The prime minister has all executive authority. The president is responsible for, in theory, for concepts of ethics. That's what his job actually is. He can, in terms of actual power, he has almost no power whatsoever, except for that one decision that I mentioned a moment ago, deciding who can form the government. In certain very special cases, he can dissolve a government. But that's never happened, and it's very, very difficult for that sort of thing to happen.
Okay, and I just want to make it even simpler for our listeners and just say that the president of Israel is kind of like the queen. He's exactly. The queen of England. He's there to give, to host functions and to greet people who are visiting Israel and to do all the queen, royal family type things. He's also there, as Dr. Mordechai Ben Menachem said, to be able to welcome everyone to the Knesset and to be able to choose who's going to try to form the next government. The prime minister of Israel is like the prime minister of England, of the UK, or of like the president of the United States. He's the one who holds all, basically, the political power to do things in the country. Okay, got that done. So
one minor correction to that.
Yes,
the president's also directly responsible for receiving new diplomats and getting their credentials.
Yes. Okay. Wonderful. Okay. So now in the Knesset, the parliament of Israel, there are 120 seats. Those seats are taken by whichever parties are voted in. Again, we do not vote for individuals. We vote for parties. And if you want to be a part, anybody can make a party. You make up a list of 120 people who have joined your party. You name it whatever circus type name you want, like the movement or there's a future or whatever silly name you want to make. And we even have the marijuana party, I think, right? Don't we have a party called the marijuana party? Something like that.
I think it was called the grass party.
The green party, the grass, whatever.
No, those two separate parties. The green or the grass.
There's so many parties in Israel. Not all of them get elected to the Knesset. There are very many parties that just don't have a Knesset seat. They don't have enough votes. But in any case, you have to get after you do that, you go to register your party, and then during elections, you have to be able. Right now, the I forget how to say it. You have to have a minimum of 4 Knesset seats before you can get into the Knesset. In other words, let's pretend that you need 100,000 votes for one seat. That's not the real number. You would have to get 400,000 votes from people in the country in order to be able to get those four seats and be able to get into the Knesset. The threshold, that's what I wanted to say. The threshold is four. Go ahead.
The threshold is not, that's not the way it's defined. It's defined as 3.25%, which if you compute from 120 members, that translates to four members. But the actual definition is 3.25%.
See, that's why I have you here. So you can give us those geeky details, okay? Because the average Israeli just knows we need four seats. Not the 3 point whatever. All right. We're going to a break. We'll be right back. If you have any comments or questions, you can call into the show. We'll be happy to answer them. We'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. This is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together, we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
All right, we are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and we are talking about the Israeli elections, the Israeli Knesset, our parliament. How do politics work here in Israel? I know a lot of people, especially one of our listeners, Motek, she is asked also to have somebody come on and explain about how the Israeli political system works, because it can be so confusing. And I'll tell you, even for us Israelis, sometimes our heads spin around with all these different political parties. So Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem is our guest, and he was talking to us about the thresholds. You need 3-point-something% in order to get into of the votes in Israel in order to get into the Knesset, which comes out to be around 4 seats out of the 120 seats that we have in our parliament in the Knesset. And I want to ask you to just explain about the parties. Now, I was saying before that anybody can make a political party. You have to give a list of 120 people on your list. You go and you register it, and then you start running in the elections. And hopefully you'll be able to convince enough people to vote you into the Knesset. But how does it work for who heads the government and who becomes ministers, etc.? Explain that to our listeners.
Well, who heads the government? I was saying before, the president decides which head of party has the finest chance, in the president's opinion, to form a government. Because there's a question of ability as well. For instance, if we go back a little bit in history, there was one time when one party received more votes than Likud. Knesset seat more than Likud, but Likud was chosen to head the new government because the other smaller parties, which would form the coalition, and I'll get to in a moment just what a coalition means, to form the coalition with that party, told the president that Netanyahu would have a better chance of forming the government, and so it was the president asked Netanyahu to do it.
Right.
So it's not always the largest party by law. It's the party with the best chance of forming a government. I should say, historically, it has almost always been the largest party.
Right. I think that was when Tzipi Livni in Kadima then, or she already made her Hatznuah. Okay. I think it was Kadima. She was still in Kadima. Now she's in Hatznuah.
She got 29 seats and Likud got 28.
Right. And she was trying to, make deals. It's wheeling and dealing during that time, trying to make a government. She couldn't do it. And so Netanyahu took over and he was able to form a government. And there's a lot of wheeling and dealing, because I just want to remind our listeners, you have to have at least 61 seats. If your party got the majority of votes, and let's say you've got 32 seats, you still need a lot more seats in order to reach that 61 mark. And you'd like to get even more than 61 because you want to have a strong government. So you're going to now make deals with other parties. Let's say if you're a right-wing party, or a center party leaning towards the right, like the Likud, as people perceive it at least, you're going to be going to, let's say, the religious parties and say, join our coalition and we'll let you, we'll give you a good law with the draft. We won't have to draft your students, whatever. And they make deals. Or maybe another party would say, we'll join your government. We have 15 seats. You're going to need us. But we want the ministry of, you know, the foreign ministry, or we want the defense ministry. And unless you give us that, we're not going to join your government. So there's a lot of wheeling and dealing and promises, and a lot of broken promises later, that form the coalition government that we all hear about, whatever that's going to be. And that's how Israeli politics works. Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem, fill in where I may have left some gaps.
Okay, well, I mentioned before that we need to form a coalition. No party in the history of the country has ever gotten sufficient number of seats to form a government by itself. It has never happened.
So no party has ever gotten 61 seats.
Correct. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the most cogent characteristics of our parliamentary system, that it's almost impossible for any party to get that. And that's one of the strengths of our form of democracy. We have to remember that in America, there's a so-called two-party system. As far as I can recall, that was never the framers never discussed the quantity of parties. But nonetheless, historically, it has almost always been a two-party system. There have been minor cases where a third party ran, and in one case where a third party ran and replaced an existing party, and that existing party faded away in America. But it's a two-party system. In Israel, it is not a two-party system. It is specifically designed to be multiple parties because we have a very
eclectic population,
multi-ethnic and variegated population with a great deal of significant differences between them. And it's comfortable for people in many cases to vote for the party that, to their point of view, represents their interest more than any other party does. Sometimes they can come to things that are fairly ridiculous. As we said, for instance, there was a party once of retirees. It's kind of silly. There was a party of there have been parties that were a specific ethnic group. Ultra silly.
And there was another party that was there just in order to hate the Haredim. That was Tommy Lapid's party, the father of Yair Lapid. He that was called Shinui, I think it was called. And they basically got elected because they hated the Haredim, the ultra-religious Jews. That was crazy.
Right. That was essentially the only thing they ran on. And the ultimate irony in that is their biggest thing in terms of what their so-called accomplishments were was the issue of the daylight savings time, the summertime, and the moving the clock in the summer and the winter. And Aryeh Deri, who is not a nice person but a very smart person, totally outsmarted Lapid and Raz, the leaders of that party, and they simply melted into Aryeh Deri's hands and got exactly what they did not want. But that's because they were basically not very bright persons.
Okay, so the Knesset parties are constantly expanding, contracting, dissolving, and new sprigs are born. It's a constant change, and I know you don't like this word, but I call it a circus. It's like a circus here in Israel sometimes, and that's what I'm seeing now. There, Tzipi Livni started in the Likud, just for an example. She then went to Kadima when Sharon broke away from the Likud and made a new party called Kadima, which means forward, and then she got into a party called Hatnua, which she made herself, which means the movement, and then in the last elections, she was elected under a party umbrella called the Zionist Union, which was with the left-wing Labor Party, which now she's out of because that broke up. It's crazy. So a Knesset member can be in like 10 different parties, jumping from party to party, forming a new party. It's nuts. A circus. Go ahead. Comment.
Well, we should say that Tzipi Livni holds the record for party jumping. No one has ever done it as much as she has. But that's besides the point right now. I completely agree with Sipi Livni's concern. I don't want to go into that because I have nothing, not only nothing positive to say about her, but a lot of very nasty things to say about her. And she's a horrible person, in my opinion. But that's besides the point. That's not the system. That's one individual. The system works in the following way. The calculus of how things are computed is probably too difficult to explain on the radio with spewing out a bunch of numbers and things like that. So I won't try to go into that right now, maybe at some future time when we get close to the elections. But in principle, what happens many times is that some person who believes he has a message for the population decides that he wants to run an election, and he can't figure out somehow what party he wants to join. So he says, oh, I'll go by myself and I'll do my own thing, and I will be the new, some sort of messiah type thing, and bring a brand new message of whatever it is to the people. Every election process that we have ever had has given birth to new parties like that, none of whom have ever been in any sense successful. Probably, at least so far, the most successful of them all is Yair Lapid, who has absolutely no message and all the wrong experience, and for some reason people still like him, and I can't figure out why. But historically, none of these parties have ever had any significant success, and they've all been mostly more damaging to the system than anything else. When a government is formed, there are a series of what we call portfolios, that is to say, government ministries that need to be spread out between the various parties. Now, the forming party, which in the past few years has been Likud, gets to choose the best portfolios for itself if it can. Depending on how many Knesset seats it has, it tries to come up with some sort of computational base for how it gives other parties that join it a number of portfolios that it needs. Now, I should mention, the first time Netanyahu was elected in 1996, he passed a law to limit the number of portfolios, a basic law, in other words, a constitutional law to limit the number of portfolios. And when he was replaced by Ehud Barak, he immediately rescinded that law.
Right. I have to stop you there because we're going to a break. And I want to say here that they used to bribe other party members to come in by giving them what's called a ministry or a minister without portfolio. And they would get all the perks and be able to be in the cabinet, etc., and have no responsibilities. That was my dream job, still is, but it doesn't exist anymore. We'll be right back, everybody. We're going to find out how Israel's elections are going to affect the rest of the region.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
We live in the age of information, but not inspiration. If you're like me, you're looking to be inspired, to reach higher, to connect more, and to grow. Well, if you want to get warm, you need to stand close to the fire. And if you want to catch fire, you need to stand close enough to get hit by the sparks. Join me, Penina Taylor, as we walk with people who have embarked on a spiritual journey towards Torah. We'll uncover what started them on their journey and what truths they discovered along the way. So prepare to be inspired as we take a leap of faith every Sunday at 5 p.m. on Israel News Talk Radio.
We are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on Israel News Talk Radio. And we're talking about the Israeli elections that are coming up and how the Israeli parliament or Knesset works. And my next question to our guest, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem, is how will or will it at all the election results in Israel affect the rest of the region? What do you think?
Well, that's very complex, of course, because it depends on a lot of factors. If, as polls apparently seem to show right now, things will more or less continue as they have been so far. In other words, the Likud will remain the largest party by far. Netanyahu will remain the prime minister. The other parties that will be joining him will be more or less the same parties that are joining and have joined him in the past, etc., etc. The effect will probably not be all that significant. It won't matter a great deal other than basically a quarter-year hiatus of nothing happening in the region, nothing significant, because people are going to be waiting for the election results. But if there is a change, then anything can happen. A lot of maybe good, maybe bad. My personal opinion is that Netanyahu is a superb prime minister, so...
A superb prime minister or a superb politician?
Superb prime minister. I think he's done a superb job. Clearly, that doesn't necessarily mean that I agree with every single one of his decisions, but I think in general he's done a fantastic job.
Okay.
The things that he's done, for instance, diplomatically, are amazing. We've never had the situation that we have today. The things that he's done in economics are amazing, in the industrial basis of the country, in the education of the country.
Okay. So we'll debate this later. We'll debate it later. I there are good things about him and there are negative things about him. There's both. I have things to say on both sides, but we'll save that for another show. So how will the elections affect the region here? Do you think that Syria will get afraid? Hezbollah will get afraid? They'll attack? They'll not attack? They'll see if the left wing wins, will they view us as a weaker government or a stronger government? What do you think?
Well, clearly, one thing is a basic principle. A left-wing government is viewed as weak. A right-wing government is viewed as strong. If Netanyahu is reelected, it will be viewed in the region as being a very, very strong sign of a powerful Israel that you don't want to get involved with.
And
you don't
stable,
want to get
a stable Israel.
With an Israel that's going to be able and capable and willing to basically wipe the floor with your butts.
Hmm.
And that's how a re-election of Netanyahu will be viewed, certainly by people like Syria and Iran, and probably by Saudi Arabia and Egypt as well. It will be an enormous sign of positive strength for the state of Israel.
Okay, and so what do you think that will do? How will that affect the region? They'll say, okay, Israel is strong, Israel is stable. Motivate Iran to act even stronger against us or to be more careful about us? What do you think?
Much, much more careful.
We're losing you.
Mordechai,
we're losing you. I need you maybe to stay closer to your modem to where we have a better connection, maybe?
I haven't moved.
Okay. So go ahead, try.
I'm saying Iran is afraid today and will be much, much more afraid, clearly. It's absolutely clear. The United States will have a much greater level of confidence in us. Russia will have a much greater level of confidence in us. Saudi Arabia and Egypt will have a much greater level of confidence in us. I think a possible deal, an all-region deal with the Sunni Arabs, and I emphasize Sunni and Arabs, in other words, not the Turks, not the Persians, etc. A basic deal which is what Trump has been after for the last 2 years, with the entire region, is much, much closer if Netanyahu is elected. While if anybody on the left is elected, there won't be a deal for the next decade.
Okay. So you're saying that, again, if Bibi is reelected and he's able to form the next government, that we're going to be viewed as a much stronger, and it will make the enemies of Israel, you're saying, more cautious to mess with us, yes?
Absolutely.
But before we went to elections...
Very, very strong.
Okay, well, I just want to present something here. 3 months ago, before we were thinking about going to new elections at all, and Bibi had a strong government, We were still being attacked by the Hamas. They opened rocket fire against us. Massive, massive rocket fire that closed down schools in the country, that closed down businesses where people had to cancel weddings because you can't have gatherings of more than a few hundred people because of the dangers. We still had Iran that was trying to send weapons into the Hezbollah through Syria. We still had them working against us. Why do you think things are going to change?
Remember, the most basic weakness that is perceived right now are the so-called fictitious cases, legal cases against Bibi that are being promoted by the leftist media and the leftist political parties and the leftists in the legal and police structures. That's the most basic weakness that the that people on the outside of a country perceive in Israeli government functioning right now. Once that is behind us, we'll be perceived to be stronger. Will that mean that Iran will stop sending weapons to Hezbollah and Hamas? Of course not. But it will mean that they will probably be much, much more cautious in how they try their move into Syria and their concept of the Shia Crescent, of taking over Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon. And the chances of a regional deal, which may even include, and I'm putting this very strongly in quotation marks, may even include Assad, because Assad is by no means in Tehran's pocket. He's much more in Putin's pocket than in the pocket of Tehran right now. It may even include Assad, which will be a tremendous blow against the Iranians. But I'm saying that's a possibility. That's not clear. So, it is clear that Iran will be significantly weakened by Bibi coming back into office.
Okay, so I see. So then what you're saying basically is that what we're seeing today is the best case scenario, because if the left wing were in power, it would be even worse. And with Bibi in power, though he can't stop it completely, it's still the best case scenario where it's controllable and manageable.
I agree. Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. All right. So we have another 3 minutes left. How would you like to wrap up everything that we've talked about today and any other message you want to leave our listeners with?
There's a concept in geostrategy called a long war. Long war is not necessarily the length, that usually includes also length, but it's a type of war. It's like the so-called Cold War that America and Russia pursued and Soviet Union pursued, as opposed to the Korean War, which was what's called a short war. Okay, it's not local. It's geostrategic. It's very strategic in nature rather than tactical. We are in a long war, long in terms of time as well, of course, but conceptually a long war. For a long war, you need to have a leader who has a strategic view of things. That means that sometimes he needs to do some things that are politically not nice, not good, not even pleasant for the country. But sometimes there's just no choice in the matter. That's where we're at right now with Bibi Netanyahu. It's unfortunate, and I believe it to be his prime weakness, but that's my own personal viewpoint, that there is no clear successor to him, because he's not getting any younger. He's I think 68 or 69, and there are limits to biology to how long he can remain in office. But he is a fantastic strategic thinker, one of the best in the world today, on the world stage today. The issue of elections right now is I think he chose his timing fairly well. If I recall correctly, a few months ago, during that time of that you were mentioning before with the problems on the southern border, you asked when will elections be had, and I said sometime in the spring of 2019. So I perceive that I was correct. It was 1 month earlier than I actually predicted.
Very
nice.
It would
be around May, and it turns out to be April.
Very nice.
So I think the timing is good. I think that it's well done at this point in time to go to elections. I think this formation of all of these little splinter parties sometime between now and the actual elections, there will be some joining. Some of them will join together, and we'll see fewer in quantity. But how many fewer and what's that actually going to come about? That's a big question. Part of that, for instance, is who supports these parties. For instance, Bennett and Shaked have managed to grab onto someone who I highly respect, Carolyn Glick, as a member of their party. And that could affect their strength very significantly.
All right. We're going to have to hold it right there. We will see. That will develop, in fact, that relationship there. And I would like to see a joining of the parties, especially on the right hand, on the right side. There are too many splinter groups, and we need to come together and unite. Thank you, Dr. Mordechai Ben-Menachem, and to all of our listeners. I hope that we explained the process of Israeli elections to you better. If you have any comments or questions or you want more clarity, write me tomorrow at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and we'll cover it on a future show.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling for the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.